The Pat Kenny Show
on News Talk with Mastercard.
Now, the topic of prostitution once again came to the fore as a group of residents in Dublin's north inner city recently held a protest expressing anger at the number of massage parlours that had opened around the Dorset Street area. The area was described by residents as a red light district, but without the regulation that exists in some European cities. While it's illegal to buy sex in this country, we thought we'd have a look at this topic further and see if designating a red light district where all the massage parlours could congregate might help keep sex workers safe, because it's not going to go away whether it's made illegal to purchase or otherwise. Joining me in studio to talk about this, Alan O'Neill, CEO of the Men's Development Network, Sarah Benson, CEO of Ruhama, and Kate McGrew of the Sex Workers Alliance. You're all very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Pat.
First of all, Kate, from your point of view, would it be helpful to have a red light district?
Well, I think we've been down to Dorset Street, and I think it doesn't really appear to be the burgeoning red light district that the media would present it as.
And how many massage parlours are evident there?
I won't speak on that because it's not my place to talk about where I think there might be work occurring. But I will say that we did speak to people who might be workers, and they are obviously very concerned about the disruption to their income. But the most important, the very worrying thing is that they mentioned that one of the places, because of these antagonistic tactics by the protesters, one of the places packed up and moved away very quickly. So I think what we need to acknowledge is finding a way of communities to coexist, and acknowledging that sex workers are ordinary people trying to make a living. And when there is exploitation occurring, these kind of antagonistic tactics, they're very damaging, because they might be removing, basically they tighten exploiters' control of potentially vulnerable people by moving them away quite quickly from
But
from
if there was a designated area where it was regulated and so on, would that be a welcome thing? I mean, everyone knows of, if they haven't actually seen at first hand, the red light district in Amsterdam, and there are other cities with well-known and acknowledged and controlled red light districts.
The issue about the control, though, is a real problem.
Yes, Alan.
I talked to the and met with the policeman in the Netherlands who's in charge of that, and they've 25,000 women in prostitution, and they can only be sure that 10,000 of them are actually registered. So even in this supposedly regularised and regulated system, they actually don't know who they have and who needs protection and who's in danger, and also who's trafficked. And when you have regularised systems like that, trafficking hugely increase. And this is true in the Netherlands, it's true in Germany, it's true in New Zealand.
You mean if it becomes a destination of choice
for
sex workers,
they
will be...
So if you designate and legalise a red light district in Dublin, it'll mean that women and some men and children will be trafficked from all over the world.
Sarah, the question, I know you would be against the sale of sex in any of its forms, whether it's in some apartment, some, you know, gifted amateurs doing it, or whether there are people who are trafficked in or professionals who've been there for years, you would be against the whole trade anyway.
Well, I'd like to clarify, Ruhama is a frontline support service, and we work with about 300 women, transgender women, and occasionally men who are affected by prostitution in Ireland. So our focus is not on the individual selling. We understand that there are many broad-ranging, often very complex issues that bring people into the sex trade. Our concern is, and has always been, after decades of looking at all of the different systems, is what is a system, and none will be perfect, which will minimise the harm of the sex trade. And the fact is, it is overwhelmingly organised by third parties, and at the very hard edge, yes, you do have trafficking. And unfortunately, having looked at all of the different models, the ones that are regulated seem to have an even greater problem with trafficking, and you have a much larger sex trade and much less resources to support the vulnerable people and the most vulnerable people who are involved. So you
accept that it's going to happen, and the best thing to do is to try to limit the harm in some way.
Precisely. And so that's why we would have advocated for legislation which was passed, which in March, so it's very, very new, which we were successful in decriminalising the individuals selling on the street, and focusing
on the
purchaser. Now, the indoor situation, you have brothel keeping laws which have been in place since 1993. It has never been illegal for an individual to sell indoors, but what we want to do is see the opportunity now to refocus, guard the resources, political resources, on the organisers, the traffickers and the buyers instead of the individuals.
I just like to, as the only person in the room who is inside the industry and working in the industry, I'd just like to describe what the one small detail of a way that the law has affected us in regards to this is that
the criminalising of the purchase of sexual
right.
services.
So again, like Sarah said, historically and presently, raids happen on people working in pairs or groups. It's considered a brothel, even if no one is profiting from another's work, and clients know this. And so for me myself, I'll say, if a client previously to the criminalising the purchase, if a client would have said to me on the phone, "Are you alone?" that would have been a real red flag that there's malintent. Now, I'll tell you, after the law passed, immediately good clients were asking me on the phone, "Are you alone?" because they knew that if they're going to get arrested, it was likely to be swept up in one of these brothel keeping raids.
You're a sole trader, mm-hmm. living on your own in an apartment and selling sexual services, you could not be characterised as a brothel keeper because you're just selling yourself.
That's correct, but we have the story of this 73-year-old woman who was selling sex to provide a kidney for her sick son, who was by herself and was still arrested for brothel keeping. But if you don't mind, I'd like to get back to this story that... So directly after this law passed, there was a very serious spate of attacks, over 10 very serious and increasingly violent knife attack robberies against specifically, for some reason, Brazilian trans workers. Now, Sway held a meeting, an emergency meeting for workers, and three of the victims of these attacks were present. And one of the women told us that the attacker had said to her, "Are you alone?" And so you see that already it is difficult. This is a difficulty for us screening,
the law of unintended consequences coming in here.
I want to be very careful because, of course, I mean, and I know Sway would feel the exact same. Our primary motivation is that those horrendous attackers are brought to justice. So I want to be very careful, but we are aware of a number of the alleged cases there as well. And while some people were alone, some were not. Some were in premises where there was more than one person.
Which
and I
is
suppose
why
what,
one of the woman's life was saved, because she was with another person.
And in other cases, my point is that, unfortunately, if you go back, I mean, you have cases going back to 2008, 2014, 2015, where nothing can make this industry safe. They are always being targeted, irrespective of the legislative regime. And you will have
targeted. The numbers.
I don't think it relates to the law.
Let's talk about the numbers. There was a time when you could actually go to parts of the canals. Ben Burb Street used to be one of the areas where you would see what used to be called streetwalkers, because that's what they did. They walked the streets and they applied for business in that way. As far as I know, the numbers have greatly decreased of women working on the streets. Is that so?
Since 1993, because that tracks back to the 1993 legislation, which criminalised soliciting and importuning. Now, the new legislation actually decriminalises those women. It maintains the offence for the buyer, but not for... seller, which is really
my
important.
My question really is about the bulk of the business now
is indoors.
Going indoors.
Absolutely, but there are attacks happening all the time.
That the law directly has led to a way that's made it more difficult for us to screen. So what level of danger and increased violence are we expected to accept, and for the sake of what? What would success look like to you?
The example you gave doesn't follow, because in some of those cases it was not people who were on their own. They were being targeted.
Cases, that woman's life was saved.
And
what will make it safe, Kate, is if there's less men buying women for sex.
Sexual
offences bill criminalises men who buy women for sex and commodify men. and commodify women in that way.
We need to move away from moral grandstanding about this issue.
What we need to do is have
reduction.
Less men buying women for sex, and then they will not be in the danger.
We need
and
to talk
decriminalising
about
and setting up red lights increases the danger. All of the international research shows that.
It doesn't. So the Swedish police absolutely. Report of 2010 said that prostitution trafficking has increased in strength, power and complexity.
No, it doesn't.
Administrative Board of Stockholm, Swedish National Police Board
Report. Well, it depends
report
which report you read then.
Just told you what report it was.
But hang on a second, it is always characterised as the oldest trade in the world.
Oldest oppression in the world is another way of putting that.
Harm reduction is what we need to be talking about.
The point I'm making is that there will always be men who will avail of the sexual services of women. Sometimes you can be moralistic and say it's someone who has a wife at home or whatever.
The vast majority, actually.
And then in other cases, there are people who are lonely and want some sexual companionship and whatever, however unreal that might be. But it has existed for millennia. Mm. It will continue to exist.
Yeah, but murder has existed since Cain and Abel, and we have laws against murder, you know. So actually, the fact that something has existed for...
Are you comparing the two?
No, but I'm just saying we have laws against things because there are things in this society that we consider oppressive and wrong.
That's why we need harm reduction laws around this, Alan. That's what we should be doing.
But do you think that you can ever stop the appetite for the use of sexual services like this?
Or do you
just frighten the people who might otherwise buy the sexual services into the prospect of arrest and shaming, and therefore their appetites should be therefore contained?
Yeah, Can I come in on harm reduction, please? Because we advocate harm reduction, but we advocate a broader harm reduction
the
than can I please
us away from support
sorry
services,
in Germany 55 women murdered in a legal regime since 2002 in the Netherlands and New Zealand. Lynette Manning, Nuttiger Vradkar and Louise Wilson, Susie Sutherland, all murdered by buyers since that legislation came in. We need
those
a whole
buyers, are,
they were buyers
they're not
they were
clients
buyers.
They're
well,
murderers
have to do, Pat,
exactly
go,
buyers
right.
who were also
Sarah's
murderers
absolutely right. All you have to do, Pat, the buyers are called punters in the colloquialism, right? Go on punters' websites and just see how they describe the women that they buy. It's absolutely appalling. It's totally sexist and misogynist.
That's why we would advocate for less stigma around the world. Respecting sex workers is a better path than trying to convince men not to buy sex.
What the punters say about the women is absolutely appalling.
And it's really, really important, Kate, I didn't interrupt you.
The really important thing is for men to realise that this isn't acceptable. This is no way, it's the really hard end of sexism and men mistreating women and violence against women.
Do we know whether there's any regime anywhere that works well or as well? I'll quote one text here. Why not follow the Australian model and legalise it? We don't hear of much of a problem from there, and they are taxed and health assessed. That's from Cahill.
There are huge issues with the Australian model, and an awful lot of it also ties in with states' approach to migration as well. You have very large cohorts of women who are suspected trafficked in to Victoria from Indonesia and other neighbouring countries. And what happens is the regulation of the industry has shifted from any kind of police oversight for exploitation to local authorities granting permits. And there are cases well documented in Victoria where you have suspected trafficking rings that have been closed down, and then the local authority goes and grants the same individuals permits because they haven't actually joined up with police. I agree with Kate that there's a real need for harm reduction services, which must include dedicated sexual health services, free access. And what we're working very hard on at the moment is trying to work with the guards around shifting their attitudes to ensure that there is no merit in them targeting women for brothel keeping when they're not profiting off others, that they create open lines of communication. All those are vital, but the fact is, you know, organised crime, gender-based violence, sex trafficking, they are all part of the mix that is prostitution. So for us, the most important thing is not to target the individual, but the fact is it is driven by demand.
The law now is, as I understand it, as you've said, even a woman on the streets, on the canals or whatever it is no longer committing a criminal offence by importuning for business. A woman operating indoors is no longer committing or is not and hasn't been committing an offence. A group of women who are making profit could be regarded as a collective
brothel.
Is that right?
Two people just working together, even if nobody is profiting from them, they essentially get charged for pimping each other, and that is a huge problem. These brothel keeping laws have to be repealed or at least legally clarified so that two people working together
cannot be. We don't disagree on that. That's part of the 93 legislation. There's a section in that wording which has existed. It didn't change with the new law, which does create problems. We also believe that that is open to legal challenge, and we've supported a few people, you know, where cases have been struck out. We'd love to set precedent. For us, it is really important, though, that there is a mechanism still for the guards to target those parties who are remaining in the shady background
now,
who are
Kate,
really making
Kate,
money.
I have to ask you this. I mean, if you have one woman or two in a small apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, and they're doing business, but, you know, sharing that corridor is, you know, or ordinary people, be they students, be they families or whatever, and they don't like the idea of a sexual business being conducted in their building on their floor.
And that's a conversation they should have together. And again, like I said, we need to recognise that we can coexist, and that these are ordinary people, often people who are generally poor, trying to make a living, and there is a way to have that conversation without antagonistic tactics that infringe on their income and suggest that there is criminality.
But you know what I mean? If I was living opposite the brothel and all day long, there every 20 minutes is, you know, on the door, "Oh, sorry, it's the place across the corridor."
Antagonistic tactics, for example, that happened on Dorset. Like I said, what happened is they moved away very quickly what were potentially vulnerable people. So these need to be conversations that people are having with the workers ourselves.
Okay, now the consensus here seems to be against having a red light district. Mm-hmm. Alan, the idea of having a red light district where there are designated brothels, massage parlours, individual or collective sexual services being offered. I wonder, would that lead to harm reduction? Because, I mean, a lot of the demand that you talk about, would the lads want to be knocking on doors in a designated red light area where they would be identified by the star, the sun, whatever? They'd have their snappers watching the people go into the buildings. I'd say that would reduce business dramatically.
Well, I mean, there's very few men, and it was clear once the Sexual Offences Act came in March that there was a reduction in the number of punters, and punters saying on the websites that actually they were going to stop buying. So it's already had a small effect in that way, and all the better if there is publicity and naming and shaming of men going in buying women for sex, because the reality is that the vast majority of women and the few men who are pimped and are run by pimps, that's what the vast majority of these people are, who are in prostitution. There are a few number of people who are independent operators. And what was really striking about the Dorset Street thing was that the people who were the neighbours were very concerned for the women who were being sold.
Like that?
And the other thing that was very noticeable, Pat, was that most of the men who knocked on the wrong door were drunk. And it just really brings to our attention how disconnected a man has to be to actually engage in the process of buying another human being so they can do whatever they like to them.
Yeah. And that's I once did a programme in the Netherlands, and I interviewed a prostitute who was of an age where she could no longer compete for business down along the canals in the city centre and had moved out into the suburbs. She had a client who had been coming to her for 30 years, mm-hmm. and they were almost like friends, you know.
These are the exceptions, Pat, and there are always exceptions to these cases. I mean, if you look at the documentaries on the German brothels and what the women have to go through, and they have to use numbing sprays on their vaginas because they're being pushed to see more and more men every day. They're taking drugs to overcome both the psychological and the physical pain of it. I mean, it's just absolutely appalling what they put through.
I think it's very important that the focus of this conversation be on what it is that people need to be able to protect themselves best. And that's, decriminalisation is no magic wand either. This is risky, precarious work. I'm telling you direct ways that already this law has distanced us from Gardaí, has distanced us from support services. Frances Fitzgerald herself, we sat down with her and talked to her about increased violence, and she said, she responded, "Is that not a deterrent from entering the industry?" what amount of collateral damage are we expected to accept, and to what end? What will success look like for you, and how do you determine to measure it?
Well, I can't speak for Francis Fitzgerald, but what we observe in every jurisdiction, I went on like a 20-year journey on this particular issue, which started in the Netherlands before they even legalized it. And what you see is, in any jurisdiction that tries to regulate, suddenly the whole thing expands. And I think the key thing is never to forget how much money third parties are making for this. It is intrinsically linked with organised crime. I understand.
Workers from this country told me that they were more connected to Gardaí and felt more protected, and that they actually would go to police when they suffered abuse.
Yeah, you want to listen to Rahama, you want to listen to Space International.
We work all the time. We work with 300 people every year to support them.
We will draw this discussion to a close without a consensus, that's for sure. My thanks to Alan O'Neill, CEO of the Men's Development Network, Sarah Benson, CEO of Ruhama, and Kate McGrew of the Sex Workers Alliance.
And
lots of comments coming in on this.
For peer support to Sway, 085-824-9305. That's 085-824-9305 for peer support from Sway. Thank you very much.
Please, men, become aware of what's involved in buying women for sex and how it needs to stop.
Thank you all.